Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by Jack Spencer, Mike Malott, and our special guest this week, Janelle Leonard, now the president of Marketing Resource Group. Thanks for joining us, Janelle.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
A little later, we've got Lori Carpentier. She is the CEO of Planned Parenthood and Planned Parenthood Advocacy of Michigan. We've got a conversation with her on the $45 million that Planned Parenthood is going to be dropping into Michigan and eight other battleground states, and kind of the state of that issue politically in the country and here in Michigan. But first, Janelle, first of all, congratulations on your new gig. And for folks in town, we've been waiting for this to happen for like, what, a year, 2 years, 3 years? How long has this been in the works?
I know. So Shields actually approached me in the spring of 2017, saying that he was ready to transition out, wanted to find somebody to take over the reins for him. So we made that official in March when I joined MRG, March of 2018. And honestly, the past 18 months has been me learning the business, learning how to operate it, but then also getting to know and making sure our clients were comfortable with me taking over. I mean, Shields has owned this company for 40 years, and some of his clients he's had for 20 and 25 years. He's outlived a lot of the principals of those companies, so they need to feel comfortable with the new ownership transition. So that takes time, obviously. Every transition does. So we finally made it public, and I have a one-month-old at home, so we had to navigate the timing with babies and families and all of it, but it's been a very good transition. It's been a great 18 months, and I look forward to the future.
Now, tell our listeners who else is part of the Marketing Resource Group team now.
Sure. I inherited a lot of the team from Tom. So we have Donna Hondorp is there. We have Chelsea Yee. We have Jamie Hillman. We have Alyssa Schuler. And then Ben Wright are part of the team right now. I'm also in the process of evaluating all the services, looking at opportunities to bring new talent on, which is a great thing to have. And when we're looking for that talent, I want to make sure that I'm hiring for attitude and training for skill. So it's a lot of great growth that we see on the horizon.
So what is your husband Tom's role in all this? Obviously, Tom Leonard, former Speaker of the House. What's his role been in all of this?
Well, I will say Tom's role has been much different with this baby and this time in our life than 3 years ago when Hannah was born. Tom obviously has his own business with My Strategies where he's working with his clients, and that allows him to be very flexible at home, which is nice, and he's been extremely helpful with the business. And then we're also obviously awaiting the confirmation of him becoming the U.S. Attorney for the Western District. So he's got a lot on his plate, and we're just balancing it all together.
Tom, meaning your husband, and he's got baby duty, and you've got Tom as your baby. So we've got like three Toms going on here.
I have a lot of Toms in my life. It's not a prerequisite to be my friend or be close, but it's actually rising on the list. That's for sure.
When we ask these questions, we're going to have to make sure to delineate which one we're talking about.
Yeah, otherwise, now I have a son named Thomas, too. Like, come on, right? You'd think I'd be a little more creative with this.
I see that you've brought some paper here for us, and we've got some polling today, and Marketing Resource Group has always supplied polling, has got some information. And today's release, we're talking about right track, wrong track with the country and the state. Why don't you tell our listeners what you've got?
Absolutely. So the release that we're sending out today, so it talks about the right track, wrong track of both Michigan and the country, and it also gives the personal perception and the job approval ratings of both President Trump and Governor Whitmer. Not a ton has changed when it comes to the sentiment of the right track, wrong track on either the state of Michigan or the country. So you'll see there that it's really evenly split with the right track, wrong track of the state. And Whitmer's approval ratings, people are becoming more decisive, but there's also not a ton of strong support or opposition either way. On the national level, the same thing with President Trump. His approvals and those that disapprove of him are pretty similar to what we saw in the spring poll across the board, which again, with the impeachment inquiry that is taking place and all the criticism that he's receiving, not a ton has changed with that sentiment. What we find, though, for both Trump and Whitmer, their job approvals are higher than how people perceive them personally. So they may approve of the job, but they may not like, or at least are willing to state that they like that individual in office. And we see that again with both Trump and Whitmer.
Now that's interesting. So looking at the country right track, wrong track, for the country, 31% say we're on the right track, 59% says that's a wrong track. And then for the state, it's pretty even, Stephen, 41% right track and 42% wrong track. Is that bad news, though, for Trump? It would seem like with the wrong track number being so high, that could spell trouble for the Trumpster.
Not necessarily. And we'll have some more polling on that later this week that we'll kind of see and kind of give a better perception of how Trump is doing in the state when it comes to actual voters and how they feel he is doing and how that can translate into the next year election. But what we see with the right track, wrong track on the country is that it's staying fairly consistent across the board. Like I said, the spring poll only had him, had his job approval rating at 56, whereas now it's 59, and the approvals were the exact same. So we're not seeing a ton of differentiation between the two. What we are seeing is that people are very decisive about it. You're not really swaying them. They are strongly supportive or strongly in opposition. So there's not a ton of wiggle room in there.
I'm a little surprised, actually, a little different than Kyle, that there's even that many people who think the country are on the right track. Considering, even if you're, regardless of what side you're on, all you're constantly hearing is terrible things about the other side. Mm-hmm. So is that really reflective of how it's traditionally kind of stood for who was controlling a state government or who was controlling the federal government? Or has that changed into a kind of a different statistic now than it used to be?
Well, don't mistake the right track, wrong track of the country to be for in comparison to Trump's approval ratings, okay? So there's obviously three branches of government, and when you talk about the right, wrong track of the country, people may not just be looking at Trump. They can also be looking at the country because, like I said, the right track, wrong track of this the country right now, right track says 31%. The wrong track is 59%. When you look at Trump's approval ratings, he's at 44% in approval and then 50% disapprove. So people are distinguishing the difference between the president's leadership versus what maybe Congress is doing. They may not be supportive and think the country's on the wrong track, but it could be because of their the congressional delegation that's there.
Do these numbers spell trouble for Trump going into the election, or does that all depend on who the Democratic nominee is?
I don't necessarily believe that he's in trouble. I mean, obviously, Michigan is a battleground state. It's going to continue to be it. That's no surprise to anyone, especially with the small margin that Trump won in 2016. So again, that's no news to anyone. And honestly, his base is so strong. And again, polling that we release later this week will show that his base is pulling out for him in places that are, you know, unprecedented. And especially with the beating that he's received on the impeachment over the past month, they're staying hardcore. And that is going to be critical leading up to that next election.
Put a punctuation mark on the approval rating being different than people's personal feelings toward him. 44% approve of his job that he's doing, but only 37% have a positive opinion of him.
Right, absolutely.
That's a heck of a swing.
Right. Well, and in a lot of cases, if you interview people, especially women, they may not like personally what Trump says. I mean, the tweets, the comments, all of that. But that doesn't mean that they don't support the policies that he's pushing through, the Supreme Court justices that he's put up on the court. I mean, there are a lot of good things that are happening. That doesn't mean you have to like the individual, the actual person, but you like the job that they're doing in their economic policies.
The other thing that you did was Whitmer's job approval numbers and people's feelings toward her. Is it fair to say that even though she's been in office for, you know, 9 months and change, that maybe people still don't have a good grasp or a strong feeling one way or the other on her?
Absolutely. I think the jury's still out in a lot of cases. They are a little more decisive today than what they were when we did our spring poll this past May. With her job approvals today, they're at 42%, and those that disapprove are 34%. In spring, it was 36-25. So they're becoming more decisive, but the gap really hasn't changed a ton. In the same way, on the feelings towards her, she's at 34% split of people that have a positive perception versus a negative perception. I'm sure some of that has to do with the divided government. Obviously, when Snyder took over in 2010, it was the first time Republicans took control of everything. So there were a lot of policy issues going on. There was a lot of, clearly we did the pension tax items. We had to do a lot of changes structurally to the budget, the bridge to Canada. There were a lot of big issues that stirred a lot of emotions and then therefore translated into strong opinions one way or another. There really hasn't been that type of perception, if you will, among government today because of the division between Republicans and Democrats. for better, for worse, good or bad, not necessarily one way or another, but it's just different yeah. administrations.
As I understand this poll, they're still saying the roads are the number one issue?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Obviously, I haven't been doing polling a ton in the past decade, but I'm sure it's been the top issue for many years across the board. In our spring poll, I want to say it polled at 44%, whereas today it's down to the 20s. A lot of that is just time of year. Spring, obviously, you start hitting a lot more of the potholes after the snow and everything, whereas now people have seen a lot of construction. They've seen a lot of the orange barrels, and we're going into fall. You don't notice it as much, but it is still a big issue. It's clearly is. The second issue is the economy, and then the third becomes education.
It's amazing to me how the auto insurance issue went from almost neck and neck with the roads during the spring in some polls, not maybe the MRG poll, but in some polls, and now it's down to like 3-4%. It's almost just like dropped off the map because the legislature solved it and the governor
exactly.
said it.
And it hasn't been implemented, right? So,
yeah, right.
I mean, a lot of people are just taking the headlines and believing that everything's going to go the right way, that they're going to have their premiums reduced and coverage is still going to be good and all of that. It will be interesting as the changes do get implemented, how that impacts the polling. If people actually see it as being a good thing or change it, additional changes needed in the future.
I think there's a lot of people who are taking a wait-and-see attitude about the reform and don't really understand what the legislature did. But back to the roads, how do you account for the fact that roads are the number one issue, and yet the opinion against the 45-cent gas tax increase is so strongly negative?
Sure, absolutely. Well, obviously, the governor posed the 45-cent gas tax, which is extreme, right? And I think a lot of people are seeing, now that the governor has cut $1 billion from the budget, is there room to get the funding out of current resources versus having to raise taxes across the board? And some information we'll be sharing tomorrow, we'll share a little bit more about that. It'll give some perspective on the governor's veto, the sentiment about the gas tax. Do people expect this money to be renegotiated, and or do they want it back in their pockets?
Is there any polling numbers here that would indicate that 45-cent policy position by the governor has hurt her?
I don't know that people get hurt for ideas per se in the polling, but once they actually start realizing it and it impacting them, then that obviously becomes an issue. So it's been an idea that's been put out on the table. I believe that people see that as a negotiation tip, but until it actually gets implemented, then people start actually...
So they might be a little sophisticated enough to say this is an opening bid sort of a thing.
I give the voters more credit than that to say that, yes, they believe this is the first step in the process. Obviously, you have to work with your Republican leaders in the legislature, and that will work towards a resolution towards the end.
Now, our listeners probably remember you were at the head of the Michigan Film Office for a little bit of time, then the credits dried up and your position kind of dried up. But before that, you were with the Lieutenant Governor, Brian Calley, and so you have seen kind of the process from a higher level. I wanted to get your perceptions of how you see this negotiations with the governor and the legislature going.
Sure, absolutely. Well, obviously, it's with divided government, there's an opportunity to come to the table on a lot of different issues, and we saw how they were able to come together on no fault, and regardless of any additional changes that need to happen to that policy, we saw people across political spectrums come around and do the right thing and get policies changed. So we expect the same thing in the negotiation of the budget. What was interesting when I was listening to Senator Hertel, he was mentioning the budget vetoes and how people don't really necessarily care about it per se. It hasn't really hit them yet. And we see that in the polling too, that the budget vetoes come at 4%, right? So people don't necessarily care about it amongst other issues. However, we have a short amount of time here before people start realizing the real effects until these budget cuts start hitting real people. You mentioned I worked for Lieutenant Governor Calley. One of the issues that was my biggest policy that I worked on was autism. And the autism families, it's a complex opportunity for people to navigate the system to get the best services possible. When a child is diagnosed with autism, they have a very limited time to get the best services possible to help them that will impact the rest of their life. So these families that have a child with autism, if they're not able to contact the navigator to get those services, they're losing another day with their child to get those services. Again, people don't see that. They're not realizing that yet. Same thing with the parole tethers. When those things start expiring, when people start having slower response times for law enforcement, that's when people will start really caring about what these budget vetoes mean to them, because it'll be a personal impact. So hopefully everyone comes together and gets some of these priorities restored. Obviously, the legislature has taken, I believe it was 50 bills that they've introduced on some of the highest priorities to make sure that the public safety, health, and well-being of the citizens remain a priority.
Well, that was one of the things that I was wondering, is if at the end of the day, the legislature and the governor will strike deals, almost mini deals along the way with the budget. Like, I don't know if there's like one big master agreement coming anytime soon. And it's because of, I think, the things that you mentioned here, that there is a certain time where counties would get paid for, let's say there's a secondary road patrol, and there's, you know, if you don't get this money to this particular program by such and such date, it will close down, it will cease to exist. And I wonder if there are just certain things from a timing perspective have to be solved sooner than, you know, other things which can be pushed off maybe till later in the year. And maybe the budget gets maybe put together that way, where we have things like mini deals happening along the way. Is that a possibility?
Anything is on the table. Everything is a possibility in politics, my friend, obviously. Yeah. Right. So I can absolutely see that, where they just take bites of the apple a little bit at a time and just see how everyone starts responding to the governor's priorities, and is there an opportunity to meet in the middle?
Yeah. And particularly since this is their first time really working together, you know, it's not like they have a few budgets under their belts. This is, they're really paving new ground in how they're going to work together going forward in the next, you know, three budgets after this. How are they going to work together? And this is maybe the first attempt to kind of blaze that path, maybe, you know, as difficult as it may seem. They're really taking out the machetes, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. But again, we see how they were able to tackle the big issue of no fault. So we know they can come to the table. We know they can negotiate and work on behalf of the citizens. So I expect I know a lot of citizens are expecting the same when it comes to the budget.
I thought it was significant that the Republicans, after saying, well, the budget's done, it didn't take them anything about a weekend to start introducing their own supplemental.
Yeah, no, that is very true. I mean, they do certainly have their priorities as well, and then the governor has her priorities. I was struck by, and I had already forgotten that the Michigan Reconnect program had been part of her State of the State address, mm-hmm. until she put that in with the Curtis Hertel supplemental. You know, that's a large chunk of money. And while she vetoed $947 million from the budget, $100 million of that was not her Michigan Reconnect program, because that was never in the budget. I mean, I think that we might forget that there were certain things outside of the 45-cent gas tax increase that she really wanted with that budget proposal. But since it never got put into the legislatures, we just completely forgot that that was something that is a high priority for her. And now we're starting to negotiate those things out. So, you know, maybe it's Michigan Reconnect today or next week, and then maybe we'll get to the roads by Christmas.
There you go. I like your optimism, Kyle. I like that.
Maybe when the Christmas is on the horizon, we'll get together and finally get that. Janelle, thanks for coming up to MERS World Headquarters. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it, guys.
All right. Let's move on to our next interview here with Lori Carpentier. Join us now for the podcast is the president and CEO of Planned Parenthood of Michigan. It's Lori Carpentier. Thanks for joining us on the podcast this week.
Glad to be with you, Kyle. And I'm the CEO of Planned Parenthood Advocates of Kids of Michigan as well.
So
that's our political arm.
Well, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's the reason why we wanted to have you on the podcast this week. Looks like Planned Parenthood Advocates are going to be pretty aggressive this year and in 2020. Why don't you give our listeners a little update on what you all are going to be doing?
Well, it's really just a continuation of what we do virtually every year. We were very strong in 18 as well. We will be investing in trying to reach voters in lots of different ways, from doors to social media to other kinds of digital outreach, phone banking, etc. because we think we are the right messenger right now, and we have a very powerful message to deliver.
Now, it looks to me, though, that you guys are going to be a lot more aggressive than you have in years past. Is that an accurate thing to say?
I think our goal this year, I don't know if I'd use the word aggressive, our goal is certainly to help people understand the disconnect between what our elected officials are trying to do and what we think the people of Michigan really want. You know, that to have the Trump-Pence administration force us out of a very specific and helpful program like Title 10, the federal family planning program, at a time when Americans really are focused on health care and wanting to expand health care. This administration is shrinking health care, and we could have fixed that at the state level, but our elected officials in Lansing don't think women of Michigan ought to have access to basic reproductive health care and birth control either. So we're sort of making that message really clear and letting people know that elections matter and that who they choose next November could have a huge impact on their lives.
A $45 million investment was announced for 8 battleground states, including Michigan, would make it 9. Now, how much of that money would go toward any type of ballot initiative that or referendum that could emerge from either one of these two anti-abortion ballot proposals that are currently being circulated right now?
Yeah, the $45 million that Planned Parenthood votes and Planned Parenthood Action Fund at the national level won't go to any work toward the ballot initiative. I think the ballot initiative is going to be what it is.
Okay.
We do not have a plan to do any kind of proactive effort against the ballot initiative other than trying to convince people that signing isn't a good thing. But we accept that Right to Life will probably handily get their signatures. And we know that there was no intent to actually put this before the people in a vote, that there is likely some arrangement worked out with the leadership in both the House and the Senate right now. And so when this all circumvents the governor's veto, which they know they would get, then, you know, we'll take them to court because both of these measures are clearly unconstitutional under the law of the land.
Now, with the one with Planned Parenthood being circulated and also the heartbeat amendment, as it's being called, that would really narrow the time in which somebody could, a woman could get an abortion. Have you guys thought about any type of referendum after the legislature presumably passes these? Are these things that you would go to your folks and try and get signatures, try and put a pause on it, and then have the voters decide on it in 2020?
We don't have any plans right now for a referendum that would go on the ballot. I think right now we know that the courts are going to back us up, and we will look to 2022 to really understand what the people of Michigan really would want and would demand of our action to protect the women's access to basic reproductive health care, including abortion services. So we'll see what emerges between now and then, but we don't have any plans for 2020.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the courts and this effort to try and end the D&E abortion, which Right to Life refers to as the dismemberment abortion. You feel comfortable that the courts will knock that down, and also the heartbeat amendment?
Well, I think what we're seeing across the country, and I suspect that both of these bills are the same thing, is a race to Judge Kavanaugh. As we think about it, we know the court, with the addition of Brett Kavanaugh, has shifted to the right considerably. But I think that, you know, get in line. There's, 28, 29 bills that are hoping to be the thing that allows the Supreme Court to take a stab at Roe, and if not completely overturn it, certainly gut it for any functional purposes. And so we'll wait and see what happens. But right now, Roe is the law of the land, and both of these measures, or one very, very similar to them, have been struck down in other states. So for the moment, we're confident that this would not stand up in court, and we'll go from there.
Now, you mentioned Roe and your concerns about Judge Kavanaugh and the court that is, as it stands right now at the federal level, overturning it or somehow changing how abortion is governed in the states. What are your plans, you know, presuming that happens? You've got to have a plan of what you're going to do if and when that happens.
Well, I think there's a couple of things that we've been thinking about, from the practical to certainly the political. I think on the political level, you know, part of me says, go ahead. It would be the last action you ever took as Republicans, I think, because what we know is that an action that overturns precedent that is this longstanding since 1973 and would have the kinds of far-reaching consequences that we are sure to see if this were to occur would be political suicide, frankly. And I think that the terrible thing is that the collateral damage to the women of this country would happen in the meantime. You know, we are not pre-73. I think there would be women that would try to resort to, you know, the old back alley kinds of things, but much more likely we'll see what happened in Texas, which is women purchasing drugs off the internet where they're not even sure what they are, whether or not they're appropriate or safe, is certainly in question. We will see the consequences of that if Roe really is overturned. And then Planned Parenthood will do everything we can to make sure that people in other states that need abortion services would be able to reach Haven states. And that's one of the things that makes us saddest, is that if Roe gets overturned, the 1931 law in Michigan that outlawed abortion would come alive again, and we would not be a Haven state. We would not be a place that people could find solace, but instead we would have be helping women move to other states. So we would have the chaos that we had pre-1973, where whether or not you had access to basic reproductive health care and abortion services depended on what state you lived in.
So what would be the closest state? Where would you tell women they could go to have a safe abortion under such circumstances? Do you know?
Probably Illinois.
Illinois, okay. They'd have to go to Chicago or something like that.
Yep.
Okay, the next question I wanted to ask you, can you name a pro-choice Republican?
I think, I don't know if he'd argue with me, pro-choice, meaning supporting abortion rights, I think is questionable, but I think Governor Snyder came about as close to a Republican in our recent history that was willing to protect women's basic reproductive health care and access to it than we've ever seen. And, you know, one of the things that I find, frankly, really frustrating, Kyle, is the number of Republicans that behind closed doors and without staff, and not within staff earshot, will tell us that personally they don't have a problem with abortion. They think it ought to be something that is between a woman and her family and her God and her doctor. But, you know, under Republican iron fist right now, there is just no likelihood that a Republican is going to come out and say that, and that's certainly not for me to do, but I can assure you that there are people serving in the legislature right now with R's after their name who do not think abortion should be illegal.
Why do you think that is? How have we gotten to the point where the issue of abortion has been kind of the defining bright line between Republicans and Democrats?
There are historians that could probably fill you in better. This all began really with the Tea Party effort, really back to President Reagan. And I think that it is incredibly unfortunate. I've been around Planned Parenthood 34 years, and I remember, you know, one of the things that people forget is Planned Parenthood is a nonpartisan organization. I remember when we endorsed and backed Republicans. We have a political award named for Governor Milliken. We have just lost those Milliken Republicans that may have been fiscally conservative, but as we call socially more progressive. And I think it is really to the detriment of both parties that we have drawn this bright line, because it forces people to choose between their fiscal opinions and what they think human rights ought to look like. And I mourn that fact, but I've been around long enough that I remember working very closely with Republicans and having a bipartisan pro-choice caucus in the state house. And it's really unfortunate that we have moved this far, and I believe that we have President Trump because of that. There were lots and lots of evangelical Christians, especially in the South, that otherwise would not have voted for the likes of Mr. Trump except for his promise to do exactly what he did, which is to swing the court right. And we are now back in a situation where so many of his policies, and certainly this one, will drag us backwards with consequences that I think people are not quite prepared for.
My colleague Jack Spencer has one more question here for you.
I cover the Senate. Is your side just assuming the Republicans in the legislature would grab the heartbeat legislation and pass it, because there's disagreement on that between all the pro-life people? Remember, Right to Life does not really support the heartbeat stuff.
Yeah, I'm aware. You know, I guess I won't say that as hardline about the 6-week ban of abortion. that you're referring to, but certainly we know, and this isn't speculation, we've heard Shirky and Chatfield talk about the fact that they're happy to ratify the method ban. And, you know, it's another one of those moments where, because of political zealousy, that we really are in a situation where legislators are trying to decide what happens medically. There is no such thing as a dismemberment abortion. That is the definition that's in this bill is problematic medically. It's a ludicrous thing to get in between a person and their doctor, but yet again, that's where we find ourselves in this. So I guess I'm not sure about the six-week ban, but I'm pretty sure that the method ban will sail right through and get ratified and never see the light of day on the ballot.
It seems like we're at a critical I want to close with this here, Lori Carpentier from Planned Parenthood. I want to close with this, but it does seem like from what you're talking about, we're at a very critical time in our state and our country's history in regards to the issue of abortion and women's reproductive rights. Is that fair to say?
There's no question of that, Kyle. I think that's exactly where we are. And I think that the thing that is quite astonishing to me is on this issue, that there certainly are those people that we refer to as the true believers that really are against abortion personally, often rooted in their own religious belief system, and that they are really bent to try to make that the law of the land, which is always interesting to me since I feel like this country was founded on, I don't feel, this country was founded on religious freedom, and we don't force people to go to a certain church and not a mosque or a synagogue on the weekend. But here we are trying to impose people's religious beliefs on those of us that may have another set of beliefs. And I think that in spite of that, we know that the vast majority of Americans, and certainly Michiganders, don't feel like this is the right direction. They want more health care, not less. They want more rights, not less. They don't think that the government and, God forbid, politicians should be trying to decide for us exactly what we do in our most personal, private decision-making. And I think much beyond that, the medical consequences to make abortion illegal will be widespread and quick. So, yes, we are at a pivotal point, and that's why I think we saw women come out to vote in 2018, resulting in the most progressive top of the ticket that we've ever had that won pretty handily. And I think we're not done. I think women have made some decisions about who they want to represent them, and who is in Congress and in the state houses right now are not those people.
Lori Carpentier, CEO of Planned Parenthood, Planned Parenthood Advocacies of Michigan. Thanks for taking some time with us today. We appreciate it.
Glad to be here, Kyle, and keep talking about the issues. Thanks.
Will do. Appreciate it. Bye-bye. All right, that's going to do it for this week's edition of the MERS Monday podcast. Thanks to Lori Carpentier for taking some time with us. Also, Janelle Leonard, Jack Spencer, and Mike Malott. Now, as part of you taking over for MRG, I noticed that you moved a little further down Washington toward the peanut shop. Is there a connection with that?
There's no. It's also closer to Kewpie's, which I do frequent a little bit more than that. So there's the connection, I promise.
All right. Because I was going to say, because if I was on Washington Street, I'd want to move as close to the peanut shop as humanly possible.
I'll wave from across the street from Kewpie's.
Oh, all right. There you go. Excellent. All right. Your favorite thing to get at the peanut shop is?
Anything chocolate. Chocolate-covered anything.
Chocolate-covered anything. Okay, I'm into the toffee-covered peanuts right now.
Oh, nice. Okay,
or those Boston baked beans. I love those things.
All right, I'll add those to my list.
Now, are either of those things good for marathon runners? Is that why you do it?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah,
because you get... Life is about balance.
It's all about packing in protein, you know, because you got protein in those peanuts, you know. And then you get the sugar high.
I knew there'd be a logical explanation.
That's right. It's better for me than, let's say, the chocolate or the M&Ms and the Twix bars in the snack box. That's what I keep telling myself.
You've obviously tried them all.
Oh, well, of course. Of course. All right, thanks to AT&T for sponsoring this and all our other podcasts. Until next week, I'm Kyle Malin. Take care. Thank you, I get it myself.